Al will be forever the myth.
You're the king of kings, Al.
There's always a pecking order. The little peckers never mess with the big peckers. So I'm a rooster, and he's a chicken.
This episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast is brought to you by our sponsor, Florida Alternative Medicine. All right, welcome everybody to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, where we talk to the legends of bodybuilding, and we also talk about the history of bodybuilding. And I'm your host, John Hansen. And on today's show, we have part two of our interview with Phil Williams. We had part one of our interview with Phil last week. We're just kind of catching up with Phil and talking about his training philosophy and training at Gold's Gym, and we're going to continue that discussion today. Phil starts off talking about some of the training partners he had, including Mike Christian and Ali Mala. If you remember Ali Mala back from the 80s, he was a really good bodybuilder, I think from Lebanon, like Samir Banout was. And then Phil's going to talk about his training philosophy, how he has to get more recuperation than a lot of other bodybuilders do, and he figured that out for himself. And then we'll talk to Phil about what it was like to train at Gold's Gym back in the 1980s when it was at its peak, and you had all these great bodybuilders training there at once. And finally, we're going to talk to Phil about turning 60, because Phil will be 60 years old this June. And then Phil's going to go into a lot of his background, where he grew up and his parents and everything. And Phil said he never talked about this with any other interview, so he sort of revealed it on our show, which I appreciate. So we got a really, really interesting interview coming up with Phil Williams in a second. Before we do that, I do want to mention our sponsor, who is Florida Alternative Medicine, where age is just a number. If you want to feel great, optimize your energy levels, burn fat, and balance your hormone levels to maximize your potential, then go see the experts at Florida Alternative Medicine and Weight Loss. They have a certified and knowledgeable staff that will work with you to achieve your goals and get you the results you've been looking for. They offer a wide range of services that ensure you will not only look and feel amazing, but also be comfortable knowing that they're there for you every step of the way. Their competitive pricing, along with their quality products and services, are just a few reasons to give them a call. So call them at their office number in Tampa, Florida, 813-922-8939, or you can reach them at their website, which is flalternativemeds.com. Again, that's flalternativemeds.com. And if you mention that you heard their ad on the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, they will give you a free consultation, and they will give you 20% off your order. And I talked to Jeff, the owner, last week, and he said they are very busy because a lot of people are trying to boost their immune systems because of this coronavirus that's going around, and they have programs for that. Please give them a call or contact them at their website, flalternativemeds.com. And I want to thank them also for sponsoring us during this difficult time with this coronavirus, and I hope you guys are doing okay out there. I was looking at some of the numbers yesterday on the national level. Boy, in New York, it's just unbelievable, the amount of cases out there, and they just had a show on 60 Minutes tonight about it. Unbelievable. They have like over half the cases of the whole United States and a lot of deaths. So the New York mayor was saying it's going to get worse in April than it was in March. And he said May is going to be worse than April. So it looks like we've got a long road to get through this thing. So hopefully everybody out there is safe and is just staying in. I guess that's the only thing we can really do, is just stay inside. And I know all of us that are working out, it's really hard because all the gyms are closed all across the country. So unless you got some kind of home gym equipment, it's really kind of tough, unless you just want to do body weight exercises like push-ups and free weight squats and things like that. I think the bands are really good if you can get some bands. I know a lot of people now are investing in dumbbells and adjustable incline bench and some dumbbells. You could do a lot. So there's really nothing we can do. And then, of course, the food supply is still hurting. I know, I don't know how you guys are where you live, but out here in Tampa, it's just ridiculous. I got to go to like five or six stores to try to buy all the food I need. And then they're limiting what you can buy. You can only buy so many eggs. You can only buy so much water. Even rice now, I noticed, is gone. I went to the store last night. The whole aisle of rice was gone, just everything. But where my parents live in Chicago, they said it's kind of normal back there. And my friend Larry in California said it's sort of normal back there too, as far as the stores go. So who knows? Hopefully they'll get that figured out, because that's a real pain in the ass. But this is just something we are going to have to weather. There's no two ways about it. Not much news in the world of bodybuilding, obviously. All the competitions have been canceled. I still have my John Hansen Fitness Challenge going on my website, johnhansenfitness.com. So I applaud those people, men and women, who are in the fitness challenge and are still going forward. I've got one guy, Ryan, who was training for a contest, and of course his contest got canceled, but he's still going through with his workouts. He's still going through with his diet as if the contest was still going to take place, and he's just going to do some photo shoots, and he is making some improvements, so good for him. And I think that's the only thing you can really do is just keep going. And all these people who are in the fitness challenge, we've only got a couple weeks left. It ends on April 13th, so we only got about 2 weeks left. And a lot of them are still going. Some of them dropped out, but they're just working out at home and still following the diet. The diet's the most important thing, of course. You don't want to get fat while you're taking off. And I think, unfortunately, that's what happened to a lot of average Americans who don't follow the fitness lifestyle. I think during this time of quarantine, when they have to stay inside, I think they're going to start getting really fat. So the fitness industry is probably going to be booming when this whole thing is over, because there's going to be a lot of people out of shape. So we just have to, like I said, weather the storm and get through it. On my website, johnhansonfitness.com, I do have programs there if anyone's interested. And if you're interested in my book, Diary of a Natural Bodybuilder, I just ordered a lot more of those. So if you guys want to catch up on your reading and you haven't bought my books, all that stuff is available on johnhansonfitness.com under our store link. And I have my books and my videos. So just a little plug for that if anyone's interested in that. I was able to get an interview in last week with Francis Benfato from France. So we had a Skype interview with Francis, and that'll be coming up next week. And we talked for quite a long time. He's a really pleasant guy to talk to, really intelligent guy. We had a really nice conversation, and that'll be a two-part interview starting next week. And I did get a hold of Jimmy Caruso out in Canada. Jimmy, of course, was a famous, iconic coach and photographer out in the Canada area. I think he's in his 90s now. And thanks to Gary Bartlett for getting me his number. I did reach Jimmy's answer machine, but he did not call me back. I'm still trying to work with Rick Wayne to get him on the show. I'm still trying to get Tanya Knight on the show. So I will just keep trying to get all these bodybuilders and icons in the sport of bodybuilding. Man, I really love to talk to Rick Wayne. What a great interview he would be. And he's on social media a lot more now. I see him on Facebook. So hopefully one day he will come around and do the Bodybuilding Legends interview. I saw Dave Palumbo had Frank Zane on this week, and they tried to do a Skype interview, but Frank kind of lost the connection halfway through. So that's why Frank did a phone interview with me. But that was pretty interesting. Frank pretty much talked about a lot of the same stuff he talked with on our interview on the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. Of course, with my interviews, I go more into the in-depth into their whole career, and we cover all the competitions they entered. So Dave does it a little bit differently. He just asked him, like, how it felt to beat Arnold and how his mental approach to bodybuilding was. So it was pretty interesting. It's a different viewpoint on the interview for sure. All right. At the end of our interview today with Phil Williams, I have two articles sent to me again by my friend Pat Comer. One was about Dave Johns, which was really interesting. This was from the March 1979 issue of Iron Man magazine. This was Perry Radar's old Iron Man magazine. And it's an interesting article, short article, but it's about Dave's training philosophy. And it's written by David Shaw. And David Shaw was a world-class powerlifter back in the 1970s. And David trained with Dave Johns. So that was an interesting matchup, because David Shaw was a big, thick, very powerful guy. And Dave Johns was very strong. So their training really worked out together. And then I've got another article, because they're so short, I'm going to read both of them today. This one is about Lance Dreher. And this was from the September 1983 issue of Iron Man magazine. So, of course, Lance won the IFBB Mr. Universe in 1981, and then he was in the Mr. Olympia in 1982 and 1983, and, of course, Lance had a fantastic physique, and he is from the Chicago area, so when I was a teenager, I actually got to see him compete in the 1980 Central USA contest, and that was right before he went into the Mr. America and took third that year, and then he won the heavyweight class the following year, and he lost the overall to Tim Belknap. And then he went to the Mr. Universe, which was in Cairo, Egypt, and he won, beating out Gunnar Rospo. But Lance had a short career with the IFBB. He didn't really do that much. He just did two Mr. Olympias. And then he went over to NABBA Mr. Universe, where he was treated much better. And he ended up winning the NABBA Mr. Universe Pro Division in 1986. So I will read both of those articles right after our interview with Phil Williams. And again, I want to thank our Patreon sponsors. If you guys are interested, I know times are tough now, and this is a tough time in our country. But if you're interested in supporting the website, just go to the bodybuildinglegendshow.com website. And in the upper right-hand corner, you will see the link for Patreon. And if you want to contribute a little bit of money to the show to keep the podcast going, I would really appreciate it. We have some great Patreon donors, and they sponsor the podcast every month. And I really do appreciate you guys. I can't tell you how much I appreciate it that you're actually spending your money to help sponsor the show. So if you're interested in that, that is on the bodybuildinglegendsshow.com website. And I am putting up more articles on there too. So check out the website if you've never checked out the website and you only listen to us on the podcast. And I also am putting a lot of these podcasts now on YouTube. So if you go to my YouTube page, which is under John Hansen, of course, you will be able to see all of our podcasts on YouTube. And then, of course, because it's on YouTube, I add pictures and I make a video of it. So it's really interesting. The ones with Frank Zane and Corey Everson were really, really good. And I spent a lot of time putting those pictures and even some video clips in there. So check that out if you haven't checked out my YouTube channel. All right. I think that's all I got. Here is part two of our interview with Phil Williams, where we talk about training at Gold's Gym, his training philosophy, and what it's going to be like turning 60. All right. Here we go.
I trained with Mike Christian for a while, so we all sort of trained together here and there. Me and Mike trained together for months at a time. I trained with them. Mike trained with them. Victor Richards trained with them.
I mean, wow. There's a lot of that'd be something.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, Victor was stronger than they were.
Really?
Wow. Oh, sure.
Yeah. Damn. Too bad they didn't have cell phones back then. They would have recorded some of those workouts.
I remember training with him a few times, and we do a back workout. And after 12 sets, I was shot. I said, "I'm done, guys," and I'd bow out. And they keep going,
right?
So I don't know how many sets they do, but I mean, they trained high, very high volume. And by that time, I'd already trained with Mincer, so I kind of knew when to stop.
Yeah, you knew what worked for you.
Yeah, exactly. So I mean, I cut it short.
How about when you trained with Mike Christian? What was that like?
Oh, it was pretty basic. We were both unknown. Mike came out there, I think in 83, before he went to California, the NPC California. Okay. And me and Mike met and trained together a few workouts. I was living right down the road from there. I mean, yeah, we trained a lot, probably 3 or 4 months at a time. And okay. I mean, just basic exercises from what I remember, not too much in detail.
Yeah.
Not too much memory in detail, but I mean, it was just basic.
Did you guys train in the off season or for a show?
It was for an off season. It was off season.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, it was before Mike went to California, and I hadn't competed since 1980 at that point.
Mm-hmm.
So we were just trying to feel our way around.
Yeah, Mike usually, he uses more volume than you do, though, right? He does a lot more sets.
I would say so. Yeah. Mm-hmm. My volume's really low. It lowered in time. It got lower and lower. I tried to increase the intensity. I noticed when I could decrease the volume, I could increase the intensity.
Okay.
If you're in the middle of a workout and you think I got 8 more sets of back to go, then you kind of pace yourself. Does that make sense? You're going to hold out a little bit because you try to get through all of these sets. So I figured I've got 4 more sets to go or 3 more sets to go. I'm going to give it everything I've got.
Do you think like what you did, Phil, that the lower volume, do you think that works better for certain people than it does for others? Because it seems like, you know, we talk about genetics and bodybuilding. You know, we got the bone structure, you got muscle shape, you've got like how the muscles respond to exercise. Everybody's different in that regard. But then also with recuperation, it seems like some people can recuperate much better than others. Like I remember Tom Platz wrote an article and he said when he moved out to California, he trained with Arnold and Arnold would train like 6 days a week. And then when he's getting ready for a show, he'd go twice a day and he was doing, you know, 20, 25, 30 sets of body part. And Tom Platz said, he goes, "I just got smaller doing that, you know, because he couldn't recuperate." But it worked great for Arnold. Arnold blew up, you know. And then, like you were saying, you can't do that high volume stuff because it didn't work for you because your recuperation wasn't enough. You know, you weren't able to recuperate as much as maybe some other people, which is probably just a genetic thing, right?
I would say it's genetics number one. I mean, the super freaks, the super genetic freaks probably respond and grow to anything. I mean, you know. But, I mean, if you have a tendency to, I don't know, my recuperation has never been that great. But I trained body part twice a week. I never recovered. Then I started training each body part once a week. I started doing this in 1978, and I started growing. I mean, so that I mean, it's individual, of course, just like anything else. But, I mean, I think the higher intensity, the lower the volume, the less frequent, for me, I grew.
Yeah.
And I think it's probably a genetic factor for most guys. Everybody's different. I mean, I would, it's hard to say what's going to work for Robbie trained like, let's say, Arnold. I think Samir trained more like Arnold. Mm-hmm. I couldn't train like Samir. I couldn't train 6 days a week. I couldn't train that.
Yeah.
It didn't work for me.
Right.
So, I mean, it's very individual. And, I mean, again, it's, you know, it's self-discovery in a sense. You have to kind of discover what works for you.
Mm-hmm.
And if you, yeah, that's, but everybody's different.
Yeah, when Mentzer came along, I think Mentzer was trying to say that this is the best way to train, period, and it works for everybody. And well, I think that's what.
I think it could work for everybody. I think it's very possible because we have recovery. And, I mean, depending on what you're doing while you're training, if you're training clean, you're not going to recover as fast as a guy who's using gear.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, so, I mean, if you're training and you're using, you know, heavy amounts of steroids, you're probably going to recover a lot faster. But, I mean, when the off-season came around, that was the only way for you to recover would be natural, then you're going to need that recovery period.
Mm-hmm. Right.
There's no way around it.
Yeah, right. Right. Plus, it's got to be hard, you know, because now we hear like Dorian. Dorian does a lot of talk shows now. He's just on, you know, he's been on Joe Rogan. He's been on all these mainstream podcasts and stuff, as well as the Bodybuilding podcast. But he talks about that was the best way for him to train. And he ended up hurting himself a lot by training like that, especially when he's getting ready for a contest. He was still training that hard. But he's convinced that, you know, that was the reason why he was so far ahead of the competition when he was competing, was because he was training harder than everybody else. But that's also mentally very hard to train that way, to push yourself to an extreme limit, you know, to absolute failure all the time.
Now, Dorian's mistake wasn't training to failure. He trained heavy. He never lightened the load going into a show.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? I think he trained too heavy. Going into a show, I mean, we're talking about 6-8 weeks out. When you're, you know, depleted and you're, you know, you're losing body fat, you got less body fat on you, you can't train as heavy as you did earlier in the year before that point.
Yeah, right.
So I think that's what happened to him. He didn't lighten the load. You can still train to failure with a light load and not have the injuries. I don't train that heavy, but I train to failure, and I've never had any real injuries.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's Dorian's mistake right there. I think he stated that in a few of his interviews.
Yeah, he did. He did. He stated that if he had to do it all over again, you know, like when he tore his bicep, he was doing bent over rows with that reverse grip with 455.
455 or 405. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. It was like weeks away from the show. And he said, I didn't need to train that heavy with only like in the last month before the show. I could have did 315, you know, and he would have felt it just as much, you know.
Sure. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, he wouldn't have lost any muscle.
It wouldn't have lost anything. Yeah.
Right.
So I mean, I believe that 100%.
Yeah. So how was it training with Ali Mala, Phil? Because it seemed like you trained, you got along well with him, right?
Yeah, I just ran into Ali about 2 months ago at Go's Gym. This guy ran up to me.
Oh, really?
A white beard, I'm thinking. He's waving his arms. I'm thinking, some maniac, right? You got all the homeless people down there, right?
Right.
Who in the hell is this? My wife said, that guy, he's trying to get your attention. And he came up to me and he said, Phil, it's Ali. And I'm thinking, holy shit. Ali Mala. I hadn't seen him for decades, a couple of decades.
Wow.
And he's living here. Crazy. He's living here in LA. He's got a wife and like two or three daughters, young daughters.
Mm-hmm.
And so we exchanged phone numbers and I tried to call him, haven't been able to catch up with him. But Ali trained very basic, everything was extremely basic.
Mm-hmm.
He was a good workout partner.
Yeah.
The days that we trained together, I've always enjoyed my workouts with him. He didn't overtrain. I mean, he kind of knew the limits.
Mm-hmm.
Not too much volume, not too frequent. And it was a good workout partner for a while until I went to Sweden. I think he was my last workout partner before I moved to Sweden.
Yeah. Okay.
So, I enjoy training with Ali. Good trainer.
Yeah, he was a good bodybuilder. He didn't really have the genetics to beat a lot of the big guys, but he seemed like a guy that was really passionate about bodybuilding. He really loved it. I remember he competed a lot of those Grand Prix shows, you know, back in the 80s.
Great back. Great arms and back.
Yeah.
Remember?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, great.
Yeah, he had that three-quarter back pose down. That was like his best pose.
That was his best pose, yes. Yes. Mm-hmm. Absolutely his best pose. Yeah, I enjoy training with Ollie. Good, fond memories with him. We used to hang out together. It was Samir, Ollie, and myself. Used to go out at night. We'd go to a few clubs on, I think it was Main Street, and kind of hang out. Mm-hmm. So I learned a lot from those two. Just being around them, I learned a lot from them. I remember Samir once said to Ollie, he said, Ollie, he said, how many calories in water? And Ollie said, <"Sady."> Ollie didn't say anything. He goes, how many? And he hit Samir. He said, I don't know. Well, how am I supposed to know? they were clowns. You know, these were clowns.
I don't know if you saw Arnold's seminar after the Arnold Classic a couple weeks ago, but he was saying how these bodybuilders are so serious when they get up there to pose. And then he was also saying, he's talking about Franco, you know, because Bob Ciccarillo was asking about Franco. And he was saying how they had such a great time training in the gym, and guys used to have fun back then training in the gym. And he said, now everybody's so serious, nobody has fun anymore, you know?
Right. Well, I don't know that. I wish I did, because I don't see too many serious bodybuilders. I see a few, one here and there, but I mean, I really don't. So it's funny. It's back in the 70s and 80s when everyone migrated to Golden Venice from all over the world. I mean, it's crazy. I mean, there's Barry DeMay. I mean, there's guys like Renel Janvier. I mean, these guys come from the East Coast, from Germany, from the Netherlands, from Sweden, from Australia, and they all come to Gold's Gym. So you kind of meet everybody, and we'd all train around each other. And that's how we learn the most about training, is watching them and figure out, I like the way he trains. I like the way he moves in the gym. You know, the way he does certain exercises. And that's how I learned a lot. But now, I mean, those days are over. So, I mean, if you go into Gold's Gym now, you're lucky to see anybody. I mean, you're really lucky to see anybody.
Yeah.
And, of course, I go in there at 4 a.m. just to get in and out because of the traffic and, you know, the amount of people that are in the gym. That's the only time you can kind of get in there and do what you need to do and get out in time before the traffic. You know, you get the morning traffic, which is unbelievable there.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a different era. Of course, the gym was smaller and there wasn't as many mainstream or regular people in the gym. It was more bodybuilders and, you know.
Yeah,
and then we didn't have the cell phones, and we didn't have all the distractions that, you know, we have now today. So,
right. Right. That's true. That's true.
I mean, when I go in the gym now, it's like, I would say at least 50 to 75% of the people are on the cell phones during the workout, you know, in between sets and stuff. They're just sitting there on their cell phones. Yeah.
Holding up equipment.
Right. I think what Arnold was talking about was, you know, the days in the 70s when he was training at Gold's Gym. And, you know, you saw this in Pumping Iron. It's just a group of guys hanging around training together, and they're all joking around, laughing, posing together, training together. And, you know, those days are gone now because that just doesn't exist. And I think that's what he was talking about when he said, you know, we used to have a lot of fun in the gym, you know. And nowadays it's just, it's not that the guys are serious. I think they're just distracted from all the, from their phones and everything. And there's not, I mean, I remember, you know, being a teenager in the 80s and going to a hardcore gym, and it was the same thing. You know, everybody's just kind of talking around, you know, talking to each other while we're working out, and it was like a great atmosphere, and everybody's training hard, but there's a lot of joking around, going around, you know, but that doesn't happen anymore because of the cell phones, and everybody's just in their own world, sort of, you know.
It's a huge distraction. So, it's not what it used to be. It's now you have guys who don't migrate, of course, nowadays, like they did back then. You don't have to be there. You can stay in Chicago or you can stay in Florida. I mean, you pretty much have the same type of gyms. You have the same type of environment and equipment. So they don't, I mean, we don't see that anymore. We'll never see that again, I guess.
Yeah. No, we probably won't. Just everything's different
now. That'll never happen again. Everything's different. Mm-hmm. It's everything's changed.
And it's kind of a shame for the younger guys. They never got to experience, you know, the fun part of it, you know, like joking around and stuff and having that group, that camaraderie in the gym.
Yeah, you'll never see that again. I mean, there's so many stories out of Gold's Gym. I mean, it's amazing. I mean, with the Mincer brothers, with Ray Mincer, with the Barbarian brothers, with Samir, mm-hmm. with Ali Mala, with Doug Ross. I mean, there's just guys with Gary DeMay. All these guys. Yeah. I mean, yeah, it was a different time.
Yeah.
Definitely a different time.
Yeah, right. You got to live it. You got to go through it. Yeah, the only thing I've seen similar to that now is there's a powerlifting team that's at my gym. And it's men and women, and they're all just kind of training around each other. And they're all like, you know, it's like deadlift day one day and squat day the next day. And they're spotting each other. And that kind of reminds me of the camaraderie that we used to have back in the 80s, where people were maybe doing their own workouts and stuff, but it was such a smaller gym. We'd all be around each other, and we'd all be joking around with each other, and we knew each other and stuff like that. And, you know, what those guys have with that powerlifting team at the powerhouse that I go to in Tampa, it seems like they have kind of the similar camaraderie that we used to have back in the 80s. But as far as the other bodybuilders or the other, not bodybuilders, just people working out, you just don't see that same kind of camaraderie anymore. Everybody's kind of in their own world with their headphones on and on their phones and everything like that.
Right. Yeah, that's true, John. That's true.
Yeah.
That's true.
So how's your training going now, Phil?
Well, I had to put it on hold, of course.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, with me, John, I mean, I love training. Like I said, I train each body part every probably 10 to 11 days. Sometimes it can extend to 12, depending on how I feel. Mm-hmm. I train one main body part a day.
Okay.
So let's say day one, I'll do chest. Day two, I'll do back. Day three, I'll rest. Day four, I'll do delts. Day five, I'll do arms. Day six, I'll rest. Day seven, I'll do frontal thigh. I would say seven. Day eight, I would do hamstrings, calves, and lower abs. Day nine, I would rest. Okay. Day 10, I would repeat. Now, if I felt overtrained during that period of time, or if I felt a little lethargic, or I had recovered enough, I would take an extra day off and repeat that cycle.
Okay.
And again, my body parts, I mean, not the body parts in particular, but the volume of training is very low. For chest, I'm understanding nine mm-hmm. sets. For back, I do as many as 12. For delts, 9. For, let's say, triceps, 8. Biceps, 5. Delts, I said 9 already. And hamstrings, I would say 6. Calves, 3. Lower abs, 2 or 3. I mean, the volume's low. The intensity is high as I can take it.
Yeah. Okay.
I have to look at it. I keep everything on a calendar, of course. I don't have a calendar in front of me. But I mean, mm-hmm. so I kind of take one day at a time. I wake up at 2:40, of course, to go to the gym. If I feel lethargic, I'll stay in. But you have to be there at 4, okay. of course, when it opens. Then you have to be out by 5:30, and you have to be on the road not too long after mm-hmm. that, because you've got the traffic you have to deal with.
Wow.
And when I say traffic, how far do you? 17 miles, one way.
17 miles? Okay. All right.
Yeah, so it's a 34, 35-mile round trip. Which doesn't take long during that time. I mean, I can get there in 25 minutes in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
if I hit traffic, let's say I hit traffic for any reason, it could be an hour and a half.
Yeah.
So
Gee,
I mean,
that's crazy.
It's basically in and off. I mean, the problem with living in LA, I told my wife this, and we're talking about getting out, is that in time, this is going to get worse. This is never going to get better. This is going to get worse.
Right.
So I'm 60 this coming June.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have the tolerance and the patience to want to sit in traffic every time I need to go out to do something.
Right.
So there's going to be a point where I'm going to want to move further north back to Ventura area
mm-hmm.
and kind of find a, you know, downsize and settle down and have it a little bit easier. Eliminate some of the stress. LA is a very stressful city to live in, of course.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't blame you.
And I don't want to do that, but I'm going to almost be forced to do that.
Mm-hmm. How do you feel about turning 60 this year, Phil?
60? I'm not excited about it. not at all.
Yeah.
But, I mean, shit. I don't know, John. I mean, it's coming. There's nothing I can do to stop it. I can't run from it. I can't hide.
Right.
I'll tell you a funny story. I'll tell you something about myself that I've never told anyone.
Okay.
And I've wondered, this is a good time to say it. My mom died in October. She was 98. Died October 21st.
Oh, yeah. I didn't know she passed away. I remember you were talking about her before on the show. I didn't know she passed away. Sorry to hear
that. Yeah, she passed away. Yeah. And I inherited the property here.
Okay.
Nice property, nice piece of land, nice property, nice house. I mean, mm-hmm. I love the place, but it's large.
Hmm.
So I just figure in time it's going to become too much for us.
Yeah.
And if the time is right and the price is right, it's time to just get out.
Yeah.
Which I try to move back up to the Ventura County area.
Mm-hmm.
But it's funny because people don't really know a lot about me. I've never really talked about myself over the years in articles or anything else.
Right.
My mother was born in 1921 in France.
Wow.
Hmm. Right? Now, she escaped Hitler's invasion of France.
Wow.
Came over here. She adopted me. I'm an adopted child, of course.
Okay.
I'm Egyptian at birth.
Hmm.
A lot of people didn't know that.
No, I didn't know that either.
Yeah, no, nobody does. I never talked about it. So she adopted me. My parents came over here in, I guess, the early 60s sometime. Mm-hmm. And my mother died and my father put me up for an adoption. He was a diplomat. Hmm. So that's how I was adopted by my mom. And my father, Phil Williams Sr., was a professional boxer.
Oh, wow. Really?
Hmm. Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, I learned to fight when I was a little kid, except back then, being bullied, you had to fight four or five kids. It was gangs, kind of, in Kansas City. So me and Mom kind of lost contact with each other. It was strange over the years. I was in Europe, came back over here. Mm-hmm. She went from the house into a assisted living center. And we lost contact for almost like 6 years. Mm-hmm. Both thought each other had passed away. As stupid as that sounds, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't remember I didn't know where they took her, and I couldn't find or locate the people that had put her in there, which were friends of the family of her ex-husband, my stepfather.
Okay.
So we finally got reunited at one of Joe Wheatley's shows through a friend of ours, and Joe helped me with that. And so we reconnected, and then I brought her here to the house I'm at now, and I took care of her, my wife and I, for the last 3 years.
Wow. Okay.
So, a crazy story.
Yeah, I remember when I was out there a couple of years ago, and I was talking to you, and I think even talking on the show, you were talking about your mom and how you were taking care of her and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, at 98, she lived 98 in 3.5 months, which is a lot longer than I hope to live.
So yeah, that's a long life. No, that's a long life.
Hey, nobody's going to wipe my ass.
Right. Right.
I don't have any family members that'll do that. So,
right. Right.
Oh, but yeah, but I mean, that's a story I've never told. I said, I need to tell this story one day. It's kind of interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. So you're Egyptian then. That's your nationality.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it's funny because we talk about religion, right? And my mother was a Jew. She was born a Jew.
Right.
My mom, my adopted mother, right? I'm born a Muslim. I went to Catholic school. My father was Episcopalian. So, I mean,
all religions.
very confusing, right?
Yeah.
We grew up with a little bit of this, a little bit of that, a little bit of something else, and you kind of end up confused at the end. So, right. I mean, that's my story growing up. And like I said, being bullied got me into bodybuilding, martial arts and bodybuilding.
Yeah.
And from there, I mean, you know, it expanded.
Mm-hmm. Was your dad a good boxer?
He fought on a card with Sugar Ray Robinson. Now, he was that good. Now, this, we're going back to the 40s or the 50s.
Yeah.
I was adopted in 1960, and my father was already 52 when he adopted me. So this was in his 20s. So I can't imagine what year, but I mean, I can only guess. But he had so many wins, he never lost. He had one draw.
Hmm.
And that's all I remember. Of course,
did he have a good physique?
Average physique back then. I wouldn't say he was muscular, but I mean, back then, you know, back in the 60s, nobody was fat.
Right. Yeah, that's true.
So, I mean, it was a decent physique. But he hadn't trained for like boxing for like, maybe 15 plus almost 20 years before he adopted me in 1960.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So when you were adopted by your dad and your mom?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. And then what happened? They got divorced and...
Well, they got divorced in the 80s. I was already an adult. I was already like 26, 27 years old, and I was in Europe at the time. So they went their separate ways, and my mom met a guy that she went to knew from... She knew from the time she arrived, which would have been in, in the 40s, probably. She came over here at 20. So she's born in 21. So let's say in 1941... She met this guy, and they remained friends, lost contact with each other, and for some reason they reconnected, and she ended up seeing him, and this is the reason that we're out here now in this house.
She lived in California when she connected with this guy.
Yeah, she left Kansas City in 1991. Now, that's, Kansas City is where I grew up.
Uh-huh.
She came out here in 1991 and married him.
Wow. When she was in her 70s.
She married this guy at 79, I believe, if the number.
Oh, wow, no kidding. Wow. Yeah. That's crazy.
Yeah. That's a crazy story.
Yeah.
Crazy story.
And then that guy passed away then while they were out there in California.
Yes. Yeah. He's been gone a while. Then they put the house up for rent and she went to an assisted living center, which was, these places. I good thing that we were reconnected because they were charging her about $3,500 a month, right? Mm-hmm. And if they had to do any service other than the $3,500 a month, there was a fee attached to it, right?
Right.
For example, when she forgot dementia set in, she basically died from dementia, but she didn't get to take her medicine. So they had to come up and give her medication AM and PM. That was $750 a month.
Oh, my God. Unbelievable.
I mean, it's a business. I understand. It was a business.
Yeah.
But you pay for every service available. There's nothing free. There's no free rides there. So they increased her 35, whatever it was, the extra 750. So, I mean, I ended up taking her out of there and bringing her back home.
Mm-hmm.
Nancy and I did that. And we had her here for 3 years. Which was nice. I mean, it was nice. Yeah, it was good. I mean, mom was great. She was good to the end. And what happened one day, she wasn't feeling well. I said, well, mom, let me put you in bed. I took her and I set her up on the mattress, up on the pillow. She's on her bed.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, I'll be back. And she said, I'm going to take a nap. I said, all right, take a nap, mom. Take a nap. Came back and that was it. Came back 40 minutes later and lights out.
Passed away in her sleep.
Yeah. Not a bad way to go.
No, that's the best way to go.
I'd rather go to sleep. I mean, I'd rather die in my sleep in, on the 405, right?
Yeah, right.
You know what I'm saying, right? Which a lot of people do.
Yeah.
It's better than that than under a semi, right?
Yeah, right. Exactly. There's definitely worse ways to go, that's for sure.
Exactly, yes. I mean, going in the sleep is not bad.
Yeah, so 98 years old, she falls asleep on her couch and just passes away like that. That's the best way to go.
On her pillow, When I looked at her, I thought she was asleep, and I said, I looked at her, and I said, she's not moving. I'd always check her breath because, I mean, at her age, every morning I'd come in and I'd look at her before I woke her up to see if she was breathing. I had a habit of doing that. And she wasn't breathing. And it was like, holy shit. Uh-oh. And then I felt her pulse. And it was like, that was it.
Wow.
Yeah.
When did your dad pass away, Phil?
He passed away when I was in England. He may have died of old age. Because my dad adopted me when he was 54. And he died in 90. I can't remember the year exactly. But he was almost 90. I would say just old age.
Yeah.
Old age, yeah. And my mom, I mean, they were both fairly old people when I was adopted. My mom was like 42 or something like that. My dad was 54, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
I mean, good parents, though. I mean, good upbringing. I can't complain. Mm-hmm. Great upbringing.
Yeah. Yeah. Did you ever think about adopting any kids, Phil?
John, I think we had this conversation before about not having kids. I always wanted to be a father, but for some reason it just never happened. At my age now, I mean, no, it's the world's changed too much. I think it's too late. Yeah, there's a point where it's too late. I mean, if I were 40 again, I'd probably consider it, but turning 60 in a couple of months, no. No, I don't want to be taking him to school on a walker, right? I don't want to be walking him to school on a walker. Is that what I'm saying?
You're right.
So no, it's not going to happen.
Yeah, people ask that about me all the time, too. They're like, don't you want kids? And I'm like, it's too late now. You know, I'm in my late 50s. So I'm not going to have them now, you know.
No, I think there's a point where it's too late. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with that. Oh, well, I mean, you know, I see kids today and it's a different time. And it's
It is. The whole world's so different.
Oh, everything. And look what we're going through now.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't want that responsibility.
I got a feeling there's going to be more of these viruses and more of these, you know, I think this is going to happen. Because it sounds like I read a report. They were saying it's because the way the world is changing and the climate changes and stuff, and that's what's contributing how we're, you know, processing and are eating our food. This is what's causing these viruses. So I think we're going to have more of them, you know.
Well, John, I mean, I'm going to say this, and I went to a seminar in the 80s on AIDS, right? In England, outside of America. This is man-made, in my opinion. Just my opinion. I think this is man-made. It's like AIDS. Man-made. I won't say any more than that. I don't want to get in trouble.
Right.
This didn't develop on its own. This isn't a natural occurrence.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know how it happened, but it. I don't believe it.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's a crazy world, and it just seems like, you know, it's crazy what's happened in the last few weeks. I mean, this is just really
it's spread like wild.
Hit us all in the last couple of weeks, and it's just it's like every day there's something new. Every day. Now, as we're talking here, I just saw something pop up on my phone. It's like, looks like the Tampa mayor is going to like do a shutdown on Monday, you know, which is in 2 days. So they're just going to shut everything down, you know? Yeah.
Let me tell you this. It's like the fires out here. The fires out here, you got fires in five different places that all start about the same time.
Yeah. Right.
Oh, right. This is a natural occurrence. Bullshit. It's the same thing with this. This is spread globally in a very short amount of time. I don't believe it.
Yeah. Possible. Right. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, we're victims. What can we do?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. We just have to go along with it. Right. What can we do?
That's all we can do. Try to survive. Try to, you know, be safe. Try to take care of your family. Be cautious with everybody. I can't remember to wash my hands enough. Of course, I keep touching my face.
Right.
I touch my face right now. I mean, I touch my face every time I come around. I'm like, touch your face. I'm thinking, shit, how do I do that? That's like, don't breathe.
Right. I was complaining this morning because I went to the store to get eggs and turkey and water. I had to go to four stores to try to find eggs, turkey, and water. Yeah.
And what's stocking up on toilet paper shit? What is that?
I went to a store last night, and of course they were out of everything. So they said, well, come back in the morning. You know, that's when we get everything in. So I said, okay. So I saw what time they opened, 8 o'clock. I got up early, and I made sure I was there at 8 o'clock. And I get there, and I start walking toward the door, and there's a line going down the sidewalk. There had to be at least 50, 60 people.
Oh.
And I'm like, you got me. I said, there's no way I'm standing in this line. So I start turning around, and one of the store employees is out there, and he goes, hey, guys, just so you know, this line is just for people who want toilet paper and hand sanitizer. Anyone else can go right in the store. I'm like, you got to be kidding me. There's 60 people waiting in line at 8 o'clock in the morning to get toilet paper.
Well, imagine L.A., though, the same thing.
Yeah,
we went to a Costco, and there was a line around the corner that went down the building and went around the building and continued. And I said, this is the first day it really hit the fan out here. So I didn't know what was going on. I said, they must be giving away something. Right?
Yeah.
I said, I have no idea what they're doing. It's a giveaway.
Yeah.
And then we drove 5 miles, like southwest of there, and there was no line.
Mm-hmm.
You could just, it was like almost like it was normal.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't know. It's hard to say. But I mean,
I know the same thing happened with me. I went to that was a Target store, and then I went to another Target store, and no line, hardly any cars in the parking lot, and they had eggs there, and it was easy. So I'm like, wow, this is weird, you know?
Right. So, I mean, it's in different areas. At least it was that day. I mean, every day's different.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny, the minute, if you watch the news, you can't watch the news too much because it only strikes fear in you, right?
Yeah.
The more things you watch, the worse hysteria. You're going to feel about it, hysteria. And they say, oh, please, whatever you do, don't panic. That's when they panic.
Right. Yeah. That's why I'm just trying to live my normal life and keep my immune system up, sleep enough, don't stress out, and that's all I can do, you know? Whatever happens, happens.
Okay, I mean, the good thing about us, John, I hate to say this. I mean, I hate to say it, but I will say it. We don't eat junk food. I never eat junk food.
Right.
I never eat in fast food restaurants. I never eat processed
food.
I cook my own foods. I eat clean. I eat natural foods. I work out, and I semi-take care of myself as much as I can. So I'm already better off than 90% of the population. It doesn't mean I won't get it.
Yeah, right.
But at least I'm better off than a greater percentage of people.
Yeah.
Just living the life I've always done. Just
living
clean, eating clean, staying healthy, working out, doing cardio work. I mean, just being healthy as much as you can. That's all you can really do, I guess.
Yeah, that's all you can do. Yeah, if you do get it, your immune system will probably be strong enough where you'll be able to fight it off and get rid of it, you know, hopefully.
Absolutely. Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah,
I think that's all we can do. Yeah, that's all we
right.
can do.
Yeah, you can't worry about, are you going to get it? Everyone's going to get it. You know, I heard the governor of California yesterday saying out of 40 million people, he thinks half of them are going to get it. I'm like, that's 20 million
that's
people. You think 20 million people are? Yeah, I think right now it's 22,000 in the United States, and he thinks 20 million are going to get it? I'm like, wow, that's a joke.
It sounds exaggerated, but I mean, we don't know how bad it'll get. They know more than we do. They know the numbers
more than we do.
They're passing us. It may not be the correct information. They might not want to scare us too badly that they're giving us white lies and half-truths.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know. You don't know what to believe.
We don't know.
And they said,
how bad this
in Italy yesterday, they said 600 people died in one day. So,
oh, did you see all the coffins that they had in trucks?
Yeah. Going down the street. Mm-hmm.
The shit's about to hit the fan, buddy.
Yeah. I know. It's a crazy world. You never know what's going to happen.
You know, whatever makes you laugh can make you cry. There's a song.
Well, at least we'll keep pumping the podcast out each week so people got something to listen to, you know?
No, I mean, it's a crisis, and it's you don't know how bad it's going to get, but at the same time, I mean, my mother lived through World War II.
Yeah.
Like I said, she told me stories when they were invaded with Hitler that she had to hide, run, duck, cover, and she finally got her way to the U.S. So, that was a nightmare, and you listen to those stories and really? I'm listening to him as a kid, but I get it, but I don't get it.
Yeah.
So, I don't know, man. We don't know.
No. Yeah, and then when I got back from going to four different stores today, I went on Facebook and complained about it, and some guy goes, well, you're lucky you don't have kids to feed, and it amazes me what people complain about on Facebook. And I'm like, whatever. You know?
Oh, God, imagine.
I'm just venting, you know.
imagine having kids and dealing with this. Drama.
Yeah, I know. Or getting laid off. All these people are getting laid off.
Yeah, that too. Yeah, yeah. It's. I mean, it's. Wow.
That too. Yeah.
I don't know, man. Just one day at a time.
Yeah, one day at a time. We'll just see what happens.
Yeah. Hopefully, it'll get better before it gets worse. But we'll see.
Yeah, yeah. All right, Phil. Well, listen, great talking to you again. I like checking in with you every once in a while because you're always a great guest. And
You know how shy I am.
Good to hear from you too.
I got anxiety when you called. I said, oh, shit. I'm okay until I do it. Thinking about the thought of doing anything, the thought of a leg workout, right?
Right.
I used to get diarrhea the night before. I told you this before.
Oh, really?
Right? I don't know.
Yeah,
if I have
you did, yeah.
Just the thought of it. But once I got in the gym and warmed up, I mean, it was like, boom.
Yeah.
And I always ask myself over the years, why do I get this extreme anxiety prior to a leg workout?
Right.
Or any, I mean, yeah, it doesn't make sense. But, I mean, that's my personality, I guess.
Yeah, I still get it, too. Before I go to leg, you do legs. It's like, it's different. You know, you're like, you do have a little anxiety, a little nervousness, you know?
Oh, I mean, if you take high intensity and you train to failure, it's like stepping on death's doorstep, I used to always say.
right. Yeah. I don't train like I train as hard as I used to. I don't train like I'm crazy or anything, but still, I mean, with legs, it's just, you gotta be mentally ready for legs if you want to have a good leg workout, you know?
I always said this about training, and I always like to say this. I give it 100% no matter what. I might be 60%, but I give it 100% with the 60% I am.
Yeah.
I mean, so I may not be
then
that's all you can really do. You give it 100% no matter how bad you feel. Once you arrive and you step through the door, it's 100%. You may not be 100%, but you give it that.
Right.
And that's always been my philosophy on training.
Yeah, and if we have that attitude, we'll always have good workouts no matter what age we are, right?
Oh, pretty much. Yeah, exactly. I think so. Yeah. I think so.
We're not giving up and going for just the machines.
Oh,
we're still training hard.
Not yet. Yeah. Not yet. Yeah,
right.
We'll do that, but we haven't reached it yet.
Right. Exactly.
So again, John, thanks for having me as guest again. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for joining me, Phil. Give my love to your wife, Nancy, and I hope you guys can get back to your workouts pretty soon. You know, I hope Gold's Gym in Venice out there opens up pretty soon.
Hope so.
I hope,
we'll see what happens.
Hope we all get through this in one piece, you know?
Hopefully. Let's pray that we make it.
Yeah.
Okay,
all right,
John.
Cool. Well, great talking to you again, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Yeah, good conversation. Thank you.
All right, buddy. Take care.
Take care, bud. Bye-bye.
All right, thanks for listening to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends Podcast. Thanks to our sponsor, Florida Alternative Medicine. And thank you again to all our Patreon sponsors. If you're interested in helping sponsor the Bodybuilding Legends Podcast, go to bodybuildinglegendsshow.com and check out the Patreon link. Thank you to all who help support the show. All right, and now I've got a couple articles here that I want to read from some old Ironman magazines. This first one is about Dave Johns, and this was in the March 1979 issue of Ironman magazine. It is written by Dave Shaw, who was Dave Johns' training partner at the time, and Dave Shaw was a world-class powerlifter. It says, a powerlifter and bodybuilder training together for their respective competitions. That's unheard of. Or is it? Not in the case of myself and Dave Johns. We've been training together for some time now at World's Gym, and my official power total has risen from 1705 in 1974 to 1862 in 1977 to 2038 in 1978. Dave has won 1977 Mr. California, 1977 Mr. America, and recently Mr. Universe. Evidently, this partnership has produced excellent results. But back to the original question, how can a bodybuilder and a powerlifter train together and both reap the benefits of such training? I've always been interested in shapely muscle size and strength, and so has Dave Johns. Since our training goal was similar, along with working at the same work location, it became natural that we should train together. During this past summer, Dave was preparing for the Mr. Universe, and I was training for the national and senior national power meets. Since Dave believes in basic exercises for each body part, and the power lifts are part of his basic exercise routine, he was able to achieve his planned goal, and I achieved most of mine. In training for the Mr. Universe, Dave trained daily, alternating upper and lower body training days, and occasionally working both on the same day, if time permitted. For the chest, there was the bench presses, often over 400 pounds, and then decline presses up to 400 pounds, and finally lying flies with 80 or 90 pound dumbbells. On several occasions, incline presses were substituted for the decline presses. The back was an X with heavy bent over rows with over 300 pounds. Occasionally, these were done with dumbbell rowing, 150-pound dumbbells, and pulley rowing. Chins were alternated with bench presses. Shoulder training was accomplished with seated presses with over 225 pounds, dumbbell presses seated 80 to 90 pounds, and pulley lateral raises. Biceps were trained with the standard barbell curl using 135 to 170 to 10 sets of 10 reps. Concentration curls were done with 60 pounds. Triceps were trained with lat machine pushdowns, dumbbell kickbacks, and at times the lying tricep press. On alternate days, squats were done with a minimum of 460 pounds and a maximum of 675 pounds for two reps. The maximum is not done consistently, but only when the feeling to go really heavy is there. Leg curls and leg extensions were used to put the finishing touches on the thighs. The calves were worked daily and not always at the gym. Dave has found that stretching and flexing the calves using the body as the only resistance keeps the calves pumped with a fresh blood supply, which guarantees consistent growth and shape. As you can see from the mentioned routine, it is simple and basic, but very effective, as it made Dave Johns Mr. Universe. In the field of bodybuilding, as in other sports circles, it's a rarity to find a competitor who works at a full-time job and still achieves excellence. Dave Johns is that competitor. Working as a counselor for the Los Angeles County Probation Department can be demanding, tiring, and frustrating, as many jobs are that require working with people, specifically juvenile delinquents. But Dave has proven that you need not be unemployed to become one of the best in a very competitive field. I salute Dave Johns as he has set a positive example in more ways than one. For seminars and exhibitions and guest appearances, he can be contacted at the following address, and Dave still prepares training routines by mail for $25. List your measurements, diets, goals, equipment available, and training time available, and send to the address in the preceding paragraph. All right, so that was our article on Dave Johns, and it's interesting to note that Dave died actually at a young age, and he died of a virus called Valley Fever. So that's kind of interesting now because of what we're going on with this coronavirus. And the next person that I'm going to read about, Lance Dreher, also had Valley Fever, and he almost died. He had the same thing that Dave Johns had, and he was able to overcome it. And I think Lance overcame it with his diet because he totally eliminated sugar and carbohydrates and was able to change his physiology and was able to get rid of this Valley Fever that Dave Johns died of. All right, this other article I'm going to read is from the September 83 issue of Iron Man, and it was written by Jim Marchand, who was from the Chicago area. Jim was the AAU chairman, and he knew Lance obviously very well. Lance Dreher, the 1982 Mr. Universe winner, that's actually 81, is fast becoming one of the most popular and well-known bodybuilders on the scene today. Many people consider Lance as the new superstar of the 80s. His outstanding physique, combined with his good looks, super personality, and keen intelligence, will make his name a household word in the coming months. Lance, a native of Chicago, has remained in the Midwest, i.e. Rockford, Illinois, despite offers to move to California. He's always believed that a physique contest should be won on physique only and not the amount of publicity one receives. If you are good, the judges will pick you, even if they do not know you. Lance proved this point on September 18, 1981, by winning the Mr. Universe title in Cairo, Egypt. The only magazine publicity Lance received in 1981 prior to the Mr. America and Mr. Universe was an article by this author in this magazine, and possibly a few other short comments and some photos in one or two other publications. However, now that Lance has turned professional, he feels that the more exposure he receives, the better it will be for his bodybuilding career. Since winning the Mr. Universe title, many things have occurred in Lance's life, but none of them have changed him. He is still the same person, eager to help young people, both bodybuilders and others, and give them someone to look up to. At the health club in Rockford that Lance operates, he's always giving advice and suggestions to members and correcting their form if he sees them perform an exercise incorrectly. Lance always finds time to answer a question, whether it be at a health club, a contest, or in a shopping mall. Lance has had some very interesting experiences and offers since September 18th, many of which he felt would not reflect the true individual that he is. One offer he did accept was that of the official representative for Barber Coleman Company and their environmental controls division. A valuable lesson Lance has learned that other up-and-coming bodybuilders should heed is to be cautious whenever approached by someone with a new deal or idea for him, and to have the person or project checked out thoroughly before pursuing the endeavor. There are many doors that can be opened with a title such as Mr. Universe, especially if the title holder has Lance's qualities. The future holds many surprises, but one must be patient. Lance has worked hard for the past 8 years to get his body to its present level, and now he's ready to start to reap some of the rewards. This does not, however, mean that he has plans to rest on his past laurels. Lance is now training harder than ever for the Mr. Olympia, and he plans to be bigger, more muscular, and more dense than he was on September 18th, 1981, when he won the Mr. Universe. The Mr. Universe was a goal Lance had dreamed about for a long time, and now that he's won it, his next plateau is the highest one a bodybuilder can reach, Mr. Olympia. To Lance, this represents the ultimate bodybuilder in the world, the best physique any man possesses. Recently, Lance asked what having the Mr. Universe title means to him. His reply was simple. It gives my family, my wife, my best friend something to feel good about and be proud of. Who wouldn't like to be the wife, family, or best friend of Mr. Universe? It also gives him a chance to meet and speak to many people, especially young ones. Lance has appeared at assemblies at several schools in the Rockford area and has more scheduled in the future. The students are always impressed with not only the way Lance looks, but with the way he speaks to them. They can relate to what he has to say about good health, eating right, and exercising. At a recent appearance before 400 high school students, at least half of them, mostly girls, crowded around him after his talk to get his autograph, even though it meant missing part of their lunch period. He has a certain quality that draws people to him, something known as charisma. Now you can see why Lance Dreher is well on his way to becoming the new 80s superstar. But he will still be the same Lance telling a club member not to bounce the bar on his chest when doing bench presses or to supinate his arms when curling dumbbells. Lance will always have time to talk to young people and hopefully influence their lives for the better. All right, so that was our article on Dave Johns and Lance Dreher. Hope you guys enjoyed those. And, of course, Lance did go on to compete in the Mr. Olympia in 1982, the year Chris Dickerson won it, and also 1983 in Munich, Germany, the year that Samir Banute won it. But Lance didn't place very well. He placed out of the top 10. I think he was 15th in 1982. So it was kind of a disappointing career for Lance in the IFBB. And as I said, he quickly left and he went over to NABBA. All right. That is it for our show this week. I hope you guys are staying safe. I hope you guys are doing well. This is a very serious thing we're going through. And I hope everybody is good out there. And thank you for listening to the show and supporting the podcast. Next week, we will have our guest, Francis Benfato, one of the most symmetrical and beautiful physiques in bodybuilding. And he'll be joining us from France for part one of our interview. Until then, guys, take care and be safe.